This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
For us. I think that's a great song. In fact, you know, it may be the number one best-selling song of all time. Sung in 1942 by Der Bingle, White Christmas. Good morning and welcome to Freedom Works, the Paul Molloy Show. But since this is a libertarian show, we even decide what kind of music we like, and that's why we play Bing. We are Tampa Bay's libertarian radio voice, however. I am Paul Molloy. It's Friday, December 19th. 6 days away from the big one. Thank you for joining us. We're going to talk in a few minutes with Heather Kays of the Heartland Institute. It is our weekly discussion of what's going on with U.S. education. We're going to be talking on possible presidential nominees Jeb Bush's defense of Common Core. He's going to be having to defend a federal overseeing of our educational system. Common Core is that, and a lot of conservatives not excited about it. Also, Vermont backs off a single-payer health care plan. Vermont's very liberal. Why do you think they did that? Well, we're going to talk about that as well. And in our Freedom Works Ultimate Top 10 list, the top 10 best and greatest Christmas films of all time. You have a list? I have a list. This is the Turner Classic Movies list, top 10. So stick around for that. Freedom Works. We come to you Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 10 to 11 a.m. here on the great Tantalk Radio Network to promote the concept of libertarian ideas. And that's why we do the show. Not the Libertarian Party, but the concept of individual freedom. If you'd like to call us, give us your thoughts or questions, you are free to do so. It is 866-826-1340. Toll free anywhere in the country. 866-826-1340. Also, you can take a look at our website and listen to our previous programs. Big Ed sets it up for you real easy. Podcast button, just click on it. TheFreedomWorks.com. TheFreedomWorks.com. Well, before we bring Heather Kays on, and this discussion about Jeb Bush, you know, he's announced that he's seriously thinking about it. It's the step after the step that you say, I don't have any comment. The next step before saying I am running is I am seriously thinking about it. And the chances that he will not run after he says I am seriously thinking about it is 1%, 99% that he probably will. So we'll talk about whether or not he can make it and even be nominated when so many Republicans, so many conservatives are upset and in fear of Common Core. Whether or not he's got a good chance. Can he talk his way out of it? In the meantime, before that, Wall Street explodes again. You know, it's been really going up and down, mainly up. And yesterday, stocks extended their rally with a 400-point gain. It's now at around almost 18,000. It's 17,778. Do you have money in the stock market? Mutual funds? Bonds? You're doing well. You know, if you are a consumer and you can invest in the stock market, you've seen a great return over the last 5-6 years, really. And the interest rate, since you can't get much on lending money these days through the government, 1%, right? Or through Wall Street, I should say, 1% to 2%. Well, actually, that's one of the reasons the stock market is doing so well. For roughly 2 weeks, the Wall Street people have been under some real pressure from the falling oil prices. That is not good for the stock market. And headwinds from overseas. So, the news that the Fed on Wednesday put all these worries aside and decided that they're going to be patient when it comes to the interest rate is good news for people that have money in the stock market. At their last meeting of the year, the policymakers at the Federal Reserve determined that the central bank, the Fed, quote, can be patient, unquote, as it prepares a timeline for raising interest rates. So that's what, I guess Wall Street is now breathing a sigh of relief. And so the Dow ended Wednesday, its biggest one-day increase since a year ago. And then yesterday, the blue chip index registered its biggest daily gain in 3 years. So, you know, things are humming along. Our economy, quite frankly, despite Obama, is slowly bouncing back. It seems like there's a lot of spending at Christmas. Of course, you never know. They never really come out with those numbers for a couple of months after Christmas to say whether or not retailers did well. But overall, at least economy-wise, we're not doing too badly. Of course, there are lots of people that are still unemployed. Those unemployment rates are consistently high. And it's something that I don't think our current policies have helped in any way. Anyway, we're going to take our break. When we come back, Heather Kayes will join us. Going to talk about Jeb Bush, Common Core, and education. Don't go away.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Tom O'Brien is on the Tantalk Radio Network. Every Monday through Friday from 4 till 5 p.m., Tom takes to the airwaves as he breaks down the day's market action. Tom combines his technical knowledge of the markets with his years of trading experience to take your calls and questions every market day from 4 to 5 p.m. Whether you're new to trading or an active day trader, don't miss out on the Tom O'Brien Show live on the Tantalk Radio Network from 4 to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday.
The Nutrition Center Hour is brought to you by Total Nutrition Center of Clearwater. Total Nutrition Center is a full-line supplement store located in the Bayside Bridge Shopping Plaza at the intersection of McMullen Booth Road and State Road 590, which is just one block north of Ruth Eckerd Hall. We've been servicing the Clearwater area with nutritional products and advice for almost two decades now. Call us with any questions at 727-724-1111. That's 727-724-1111. The website is TotalNutritionUSA.com.
Tune in to The Book Club with John Austin.
Well, I actually taught public speaking, as you probably know, in college for 7-8 years.
You could ask the questions and answer them yourself. I could just sit here.
You ask terrific questions, you listen, and you it's just a joy to work with you.
Well, I
love
working.
We should go on the road, you know?
Right, well, I'd be happy to. And
you may not be able to go on the road, but don't worry. We bring The Book Club to you every Tuesday at noon right here on the Tantalk Radio Network.
The excitement happens every day at the Clearwater Marine Aquarium. You can find yourself in the water with a dolphin, feeding a stingray, watching our world-famous dolphin shows, sailing on our eco boat tour, and even having your picture taken with a dolphin. The Clearwater Marine Aquarium is home of the world's most famous dolphin, Winter, the star of the movie Dolphin Tale, filmed at the Clearwater Marine Aquarium. Winter lost her tail but is now healthy and swimming freely due to a prosthetic tail. Be exposed to marine life and more. Take a behind-the-scenes tour to see how the animal hospital works. View the animal's food prep kitchen, the vet's lab, the surgical suite, and rehab areas. The aquarium houses river otters, sea turtles, stingray, sharks, and a host of brilliant fish. Come to the Clearwater Marine Aquarium, 249 Windward Passage in Clearwater, or check them on the web at seawinter.com for more information. Open Sunday through Thursday, 10 to 5. Friday and Saturday, 10 to 6. Call 727-441-1790. Make plans to enjoy the day at the Clearwater Marine Aquarium, 249 Windward Passage in Clearwater, the official home of Winter, the star of the movie Dolphin Tale, a last memory.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey, we're back on Freedom Works. Thank you very much for joining us, and we're delighted to have Heather Kays with us from the Great Heartland Institute. Heather is the managing editor of the School Reform News, which is a regular Heartland publication, talking about, I think, the most important topic that we can discuss, which is the education of our kids. And boy, oh boy, do we need a sharp focus on it these days. Heather, welcome again to Freedom Works.
Thank you.
I wanted to, and I know you want to talk about it as well. Jeb Bush has announced that he's practically almost thinking about, but almost quite, well, let's just say he's decided he's probably going to run for president. And one of the biggest issues that will be coming up and probably thrown at him by conservatives as he battles in the primary is his stance on this thing called Common Core. So I know that Time Magazine has put out a story about it, how the Republican base hates it, and also CBS has talked about Jeb's defense of Common Core standards. Let's talk a little bit about it. First of all, do you think he should come along and kind of back away from the concept of Common Core, not for his own political purposes, but just as a matter of principle?
As a matter of principle, absolutely he should change his mind about it. And also politically, if he was attempting to be smart, he would back away as well.
I think you're right. Now, there is a quote here, if I can find it, and he kind of, you know, straddles the line. He says that he finds the debate about Common Core troubling. He says education should be a, quote, national priority, not turned into a federal program. You know how he's kind of skirting the line there. And then when people talk about, well, isn't it better to, you know, have the parents more involved or local districts? He seems to say, yes, if they'll do it, that would be wonderful. That would be great. But it just, I guess somewhere in there, it sounds like he's saying, but they're not doing it, and therefore someone's got to do it. Do you get that same sense?
I get the sense that he doesn't really know what he's talking about, to be perfectly honest
okay.
with you, because he starts out saying that Common Core state standards should be the new minimum in classrooms, but for states who choose another path, that they should aim even higher, raise standards, and try to do better. These are mediocre standards, according to curriculum experts and teachers, and many, many smart people across the nation have decided that these standards are not particularly good. So I'm not entirely sure why, if we decided that we had to have national standards, why this would be the goal. Secondly, national standards have, there's no proof to indicate that it improves student achievement scores. There's just simply no proof of that. But the real problem that I see here is that Jeb Bush goes on to say that states should ultimately be in control of education. They are the ones who should be able to make reform happen because ultimately they're accountable. So if the federal government wants to play a role in reform, it should stop tying every education dollar to a rule written in Washington, D.C. That is a great quote if he actually meant it. That is a hilarious thing to say when you're also supporting Common Core.
Right.
Millions of dollars were tied to this program. States were convinced to sign up for it in the hopes of winning Race to the Top money.
Well, this is what I mean by his straddling both sides. He's being a politician, isn't he? He's, on the one hand, he's defending Common Core, and then on the other hand, he's trying to say, well, you know, it's not really the federal government. It's kind of a national, you know, he's trying to have it both ways. Now, the interesting thing is, and I applaud him for it, he figured out a way to get vouchers working in Florida. And I think he did a wonderful job doing that, because he had to get around a crazy rule we have here in the state of Florida, which makes it harder than in other states to approve vouchers. But he figured it out, and he sent it through private businesses. So from that standpoint, I think I think his heart is in the right place. Do you agree with that?
I do agree with that. I think he's been great for school choice, and the voucher program in Florida is one of the best in the nation, and it's a wonderful example of how school choice can work. What is troubling to me is the fact that Jeb Bush doesn't seem to understand that Common Core limits choice, that Common Core makes it harder for states to actually be in control of education. They lose autonomy, they lose rights, and the federal government is overreaching by a lot.
Why do you think he thought that? I mean, I know we cannot get inside his head, either one of us, but why would a guy that is so high on choice by parents and, you know, keeping it close to the parents as far as the importance of selecting schools, I wonder what it was that made him think that the federal government now should come up with some sort of an overall plan for fundamental education. I mean, he must have thought there are so many cities in this country that have such an underwhelming standard of education that it's worth the risk of my being a conservative to get up here and talk about something that would force me. So in other words, it's kind of like, I would look at it like trying to nationalize health insurance. You're going to try to help those that really need it, but by doing what you're doing, you're going to mediocritize it for 90% of the people. You know what I mean?
That's absolutely accurate, and it is understandable to recognize that education is so messed up at this point that something needs to be done. Somebody needs to try to do something. Really, I feel that school choice is more of the answer, and Common Core is creating more problems than it's actually fixing. But I can understand the sentiment behind it. It makes sense to me that people can be convinced that you want the standard to be the same in Mississippi as it is in New York. You want what kids are learning to mean the same thing, for them to be at the same standard of education after they graduate high school. But really, that isn't exactly the way that it's supposed to work. States are supposed to be in control. Education is not enumerated as a federal power in the Constitution, so legally, there is no standing for there to be national standards regarding curriculum. There's sort of a semantical argument that happens where proponents of Common Core will say that standards are not the same thing as curriculum, but to pretend that standards don't affect what is taught and the way that it is taught is just foolish.
Yeah, I think your logic is absolutely right. And I think that logic has evaded Jeb Bush, at least in this area. We're talking with Heather Kayes. She is the managing editor of School Reform News for the Great Heartland Institute, a wonderful libertarian think tank, which, by the way, gets kudos all the time for the way they handle the different important topics in our culture. And Heather, you do indeed work with a great, great organization. So how many states have abandoned Common Core? Do we have a count? I know that there are some that are seriously trying to. But is there any way of telling us, you know,
There have been a few who have been successful to a certain extent, and there are several others who are trying, but it's at least half a dozen states who are actively doing everything within their power to get away from it. It's been messier in some states than others. For example, in Louisiana, Governor Bobby Jindal has had a very hard time because he's fighting his own, you know, head of education as far as whether or not the state should actually repeal the standards.
You know, I was looking at the Time Magazine article. Heather always sends me a couple of articles that she'd like to talk about. And Time Magazine, which is, I think, on the side of Common Core, and you can tell by reading it, just by the way they wrote the article. And did they indeed talk about Jindal himself? Yes, they did. Louisiana Governor Jindal, often listed among the potential presidential hopefuls, used to support Common Core. Now so publicly against it, he's launched a lawsuit in his own state and against the U.S. Department of Education, claiming the standards are a violation of states' rights. I'm not sure that Jindal was ever on board, by the way, but I know that there were some Republicans that that probably thought it was a good idea. They don't tend to lean conservative. And the interesting thing about Jeb Bush is that in many ways, he really is very strongly conservative, I think. And then he's just got a couple of little non-conservative spots in him. You know, I think the other thing, of course, is immigration. Those are the two. Those are his Achilles heels when it comes to the primary. And I wonder if he's going to harden his stance both on immigration and Common Core, you know, against them, or, you know what I mean, take a more conservative approach. But do you think Jeb Bush himself, I mean, overall, I'm just, you know, kind of putting you on the spot, do you think he'd be a good presidential candidate overall?
I think he'd be better than a lot of people, but the Common Core issue kind of kills it for me. It truly does. I think that it's a big enough misstep that it really, he needs to be rethinking what he's doing. And in reference to that Time article, what they said about Governor Jindal is unfair and very biased, in my opinion. Yeah. I do believe that he did support the standards initially because, like everybody else, Louisiana wanted those education dollars. So yes, they were doing what they thought was the right thing for their state at the time. Then once he learned what the education standards were about, once he had parents and teachers up in arms about the standards, he changed his mind. And he's been criticized heavily for playing politics. And I think that it's entirely plausible that he actually did change his mind about the standards. A lot of states signed up for them without actually knowing what they were getting into. A lot of states hadn't even seen a final version when they had already agreed to the standards. So it seems like more and more information surfacing could lead to somebody changing their mind. And I find it offensive that people are criticizing Jindal for the lawsuits and for the statements that he's made as if he's flip-flopping or not taking a strong stand. He is doing what his constituents want, first of all, which is his job. And second of all, who doesn't like a man who can admit he was wrong?
Yeah, exactly. I think you're right about that. Who do you think is the best candidate for president if you marked him only by his stance on education? Do you think there's one that stands out among? I know it won't be a Democrat, but I mean, is there any single candidate you think, now that guy would really make a difference and education would indeed come out the winner?
That is a really difficult question.
Yeah, isn't it? I can't either.
I have issues with all of them, to be honest with you.
I do too, but I'm trying to think now. I tend to lean a little bit on this one, I think, possibly, towards Rand Paul.
Yeah, I can see that.
Because I think he would push the idea of freedom and educational choices. And I don't know, maybe I'm wrong about that. He might say he doesn't even like vouchers because somehow you've still got to get the government involved. You know, he'd want complete freedom in education. But I don't know. I think Rand Paul might be good with that. He seems like a sincere guy on the issues. You may not agree with him all the time, but it seems like he really does believe what he says. Heather, are there any what's going on? I know we're getting close to Christmas. What's the Heartland? What have you been doing recently? Have you got some things coming up? Are you just going to take a little Christmas break, or what's going on?
We're working on an event to be held in January to celebrate school choice. It's National School Choice Week in January. Also working on a story right now, which is kind of upsetting, out of Ohio. They have a pilot project in Columbus where a bunch of schools were eligible for a pilot program of a parent trigger law. And the way that a parent trigger law is supposed to work is that 51% of parents within a certain school district would have to sign a petition saying that they wanted the school to be changed. It can either be transformed into a charter school, management can be changed. There are several different options on what they can select to do, but if they get 51% of the vote, then the state has to go along with it and do what they say. Unfortunately, the state has done little to nothing to make parents aware of the fact that the Parent Trigger pilot program exists in Columbus. So nobody is signing the petitions. They only have until the end of the year to get the signatures that would be needed in to make a change for next year. And it's kind of, according to my contact at Students First, Greg Harris, basically what's happening is this was done by design. They want the pilot program to fail so that they can justify saying the law doesn't need to exist.
So they're not, they're making sure there isn't any publicity, and I imagine the local stations to some extent are going along with it, and the newspapers there too, right?
Right. I have seen a handful of stories about it at all, and I've written at least one of them myself.
Oh, yeah.
And it's upsetting because all they've done is put a link, a page up on their website. So basically the parents would need to know that the law existed in the first place, but there hasn't been much publicity. Schools could have done a lot of different things. The state could have done a lot of different things in the way of sending something home, you know, a mailer or just a piece of paper put in the students' backpacks. PTAs could have been talking about it.
Well, you know, the teachers' unions won't. You know, the teachers' unions won't want to put the little announcement in the backpack.
Of course not.
In fact, when they get a stack of them from the principal, they throw them right into the waste can. So, you know, that's what would happen with that. But that's a troubling issue, and I'm glad you're pushing it. Maybe we can get some. Maybe there can be some more publicity garnered. They've only got a few more days left. I wonder how many signatures they need.
Well, it would depend on the size of each of the districts. It's 20 different schools that were eligible to have been able to
do this.
But there just hasn't been a whole lot of movement because parents just don't know about it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's very distressing. I hope indeed that the word gets out there. Heather, as always, we want to thank you so much. I also want to wish you a very Merry Christmas. And you know, coming up in the new year, I'm just hoping that we can continue to kind of ring the bell for school choice, for charter schools, even for homeschooling. Because if anything, we've got to take back education. We've got to take it back and get it back to the parents and the local schools, the local school districts, just kind of keep that interest going. So, Heather, as always, thank you very, very much.
Thank you, and have a good holiday.
Thank you, Heather. Heather Kays, Heartland Institute. All right, taking a break. Don't forget, we're going to talk about the 10 greatest Christmas movies of all time. See if it makes any of your lists.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Show me the money.
It's the Employment Opportunity Hour with Gene Hodge every Thursday night from 7 until 8.
So the purpose of the show is to help you out there to find something that you enjoy doing instead of a job. And at the start of the show, I normally give out a formula, which I know will guarantee you to find the type of job that you want right now.
Find out the formula to an enjoyable job with Gene Hodge's Employment Opportunity Hour every Thursday night from 7 until 8 here on the Tantalk Radio Network.
Show me the money. At the Oaks of Clearwater, you'll enjoy a lifestyle to fit your needs. From independent living, assisted living, memory care, and skilled nursing. Our exciting independent lifestyle is the perfect combination of freedom, comfort, and security. Enjoy total independence with peace of mind. Our independent lifestyle includes chef-prepared meals in our beautiful waterfront dining room, a continental breakfast, all utilities, including cable and telephone, housekeeping with linen service, scheduled transportation, including trips for shopping, local restaurants, theater, and more. Our activities program is second to none. At the Oaks of Clearwater, you'll enjoy affordable luxury waterfront senior living with a million-dollar view. Call today, 727-445-4069, and discover where caring, compassionate service really makes the difference.
Let's Go Bowling, heard on the Tan Talk Radio Network every Wednesday, 11 a.m. to 12 Eastern Time, sponsored by 12 Strike and Innovative Ball Spinner. If you bowl, if you haven't bowled in a while, or if you never bowled, why don't you be one of 65 million people have bowled last year? Listen to the tip of the week, bowling stars, old and new. Let's Go Bowling Show, GoBowlingShow.com.
Go yard is a metaphor used in baseball, meaning to hit a home run. Life struggles can make you feel like you just struck out. It's times like these that we need a little batting practice to pick ourselves back up and get back in the game. Whether you are dealing with marital issues, drug addiction, rebellious teens, anxiety, depression, or just generally having a bad day, call Mama Mac. If life has you down 0-2, before you strike out, learn to go yard. Go yard with Mama Mac on this radio station, Thursdays, 6 o'clock.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
We are back. I am Paul Malloy. This is Freedom Works on the Tan Talk Radio Network. Thank you for joining us. Well, Vermont, the green state, you know, a liberal state, let's face it. Well, they touted and broadcast the fact that they were going to prepare for a single-payer health care system. It would start in 2017, about 2 years from now. So the trumpets were blaring. Well, now their governor, Peter Shumlin, is canceling the plans to create that health care system. I'm not going to undermine the hopes of achieving critically important health care reforms for this state, he said. By pushing prematurely for single payer when it is not the right time for Vermont. Not the right time for Vermont means they don't have any money to do it. And here's the deal. Even while plans were moving ahead for the single payer plan, it's, by the way, going to be called Green Mountain Care, the money didn't show up. Tax hikes would be required, first of all, to pay for it. This would include a hike of 11.5% on the payroll tax in the state of Vermont, as well as an additional income tax going all the way up to 9.5%. Nobody is going to go for that. And you want to lose companies out of your state? Hike your payroll tax 11.5%. Watch them cross over the line to another state. Here's the governor again, pushing for single-payer health care when the time isn't right. And it might hurt our economy, would not be good for Vermont. No kidding. Now, Shumlin's office released a little slideshow showing more detail about the financing, which didn't come. They had hoped for $267 million from the feds to get this thing off the ground, courtesy of an Obama waiver for Obamacare. But the current estimate has fallen to less than half of that, $106 million. They also vastly overestimated what they would get in federal Medicaid funding by $150 million. You know, single-payer, and that's what really people that are for Obamacare, they really, most of them really want what they think is a real simple solution. They look at it like single-payer. Okay, all the bills go to the federal government. That's going to be real easy. Well, we won't have the states involved. We'll just send all the bills to the feds, as if somehow in a tightly ribbon package that's going to work. Of course it won't work. And the same things that are happening now to the quality of health care and the cost of health care now with Obamacare will happen even more so the more you take the private sector out of it. It'll happen even more so. More doctors will jump quicker out of the business. Prices will go higher quicker that will be charged because fraud very, very, very easily will be what is going on when the federal government tries to oversee all the doctors, all the hospitals, all the nurses, all the medical workers, you know, that are involved. Because you got to remember, all of these bills that are being sent to the federal government for the services, there's no way the federal government can monitor that. And so what happens ultimately is that the people, us, the taxpayers, are going to be spending all kinds of money for a product that's going to get worse and worse and worse. And when the federal government runs it and decides what the salaries will be, or I should say what the payback to doctors and hospitals and nurses and all of the people that are involved in the healthcare product, giving out the healthcare product, servicing it, when the federal government decides what the prices will be for a certain operation, a certain procedure, which they're starting to do now, you are limiting the quality of the care, because the best surgeons and the best doctors should be paid more, and they are paid more in a free market system, because more patients will go to them because they're so good. But when you limit the amount of money that these doctors, surgeons, whatever, will get, it's a disincentive for them to be good. They're not going to get any more than anybody else for what they're doing. I mean, if I'm doing a better surgery than a guy in a hospital down the street, I want to be paid more for it, actually. I deserve to be paid more for it. That's the way it is in the free market. But if you take any product out of the free market, that goes away. Incentive is always the first death. Incentive is always the first death in a socialistic approach to anything. That's why all the countries that try socialism, whether it's the communist countries, because that's just the stronger form, or, you know, Sweden, or you name the France, social approaches, Greece, Spain, it drives really entrepreneurial types, the Thomas Edisons of the world, out of the place. It drives them out. There's no incentive to stay. They will look for the Hong Kongs of the world, where free market is still going strong. You know, and it used to be the United States was the biggest and best place to go, because everybody knew if you came here and you worked hard and succeeded, you'd make a lot of money and do well, be happy. That was the point of freedom. You know? That was the point, to come here, and if you knew you were kind of on your own, but you knew that if you worked hard, you would be rewarded, and you were. Anyway, so Vermont is backing off this healthcare program, as they should, now the next step is to kind of disassemble this god-awful Obamacare. And hopefully, with the new Congress and with the courts, slowly but surely, we can start to try to return it to the private sector. Anyway, we're going to take our break. We're getting closer. Top 10 greatest Christmas movies. Stay with us.
Jingle bell, jingle bell, jingle bell rock. Jingle bells swing and jingle bells ring. Snowing and blowing up bushels of fun.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi, my name's Pat Maxson. I buy houses. I want to bring to your attention my new radio show on Tan Talk every Wednesday evening, drive time 5 to 6. If you're interested in flipping houses, wholesaling, rehabbing, rentals, and many other topics related to real estate, then call me at 813-419-1713. 813-419-1713. The good news is I may just buy your house, any situation, so listen every Wednesday evening from 5 to 6 on the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Pryor Smith speaking from Toronto with an invitation to all vacationing Canadians throughout Central Florida to join me here on Tan Talk for Canada Calling, a daily update of news from home each day, Monday through Saturday at 9 a.m. and 12 noon. That's Canada Calling, a 61-year listening tradition coast to coast in Florida. Tell your friends and neighbors to join us each day, Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. and 12 noon for Canada Calling here on the Tan Talk Network.
Money, money, money. How much time do you spend worrying about money? What if you could get the things you need without money? You can. It's called barter, and it's the oldest and most enduring form of exchange on the planet. Dave Wagenvoord's book, No Cash, No Problem, How to Get What You Want in Business and in Life Without Using Cash, is the new Bible of barter. In this book, you'll discover a new mindset that can change your life forever. Learn a secret that is said to be known by only 500 people around the world. Gain a new skill set that can make you rich. See how multi-million dollar deals are done behind the scenes, all without using any cash. Complete your first cashless transaction before you even finish the book. Marketing guru Jay Abraham christened Dave Wagenvoord the king of barter. Order Dave's book, No Cash, No Problem, by phone. Credit cards accepted. Call 727-441-3311. 727-441-3311. 727-441-3311.
Frozen. In that instant when the puck appears in the back of the net. In that moment when jaws open in astonishment. In that second, everything stands still. But the next second, you are the energy that shatters the stillness. The Tampa Bay Lightning. Be the thunder.
Lightning single game tickets are on sale now. Visit TampaBayLightning.com or call 800-745-3000.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Hey, we're back. How do you like that Christmas music in the background, huh? Getting close, getting close. Well, a federal appeals court in Cincinnati has decided that there is that a gun law there is unconstitutional. And the law overturns a ban on on giving back to a Michigan man who was committed to a mental institution his gun. Now, the three-judge panel, this is the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals, unanimously said that a federal ban on gun ownership for those who have been committed to a mental facility really violates the Second Amendment. Now, this guy, 73-year-old man, tried to buy a gun and was denied it on the grounds that he had been in a mental hospital in 1986 after suffering some emotional problems. His lawyer, you know, obviously argued for him on that. And the decision is the first by a federal appeals court to rule that a federal gun law is unconstitutional since 2008. And then the Supreme Court, struck down a ban on firearms ownership in Washington, D.C. Now, current federal law bans gun ownership for convicted felons, people under 18, illegal immigrants, drug addicts, and those ordered into a mental institution. But, you know, you might go into a hospital for a while, and by the way, a mental institution, right? If you go into the wing of a hospital where people are having psychiatric trouble for a while, and especially in this case, this guy was in there, you know, 30 years ago. Almost 30 years ago, 1986. I mean, to hold that against them for getting a gun now, right? So I guess this is an important step. If you're still in a mental institution and you call, you know, from the wall phone over to the local, gun shop and ask for a bazooka, obviously that doesn't make too much sense. But, you know, if you're depressed or you've got some mental problem for a while, to have that haunt you the rest of your life, I'm not so sure. So I tend to think that that makes sense. Well, a couple of polls coming out, mostly negative. First one, both Fox News polls, two-thirds of the people surveyed say the government is broken. And they're a little more charitable about that issue than last year. About two-thirds, 65% of those surveyed by Fox News say that the federal government is broken. 65% saying it now, but back a year ago, 71% said it. So it's less broken today, apparently. The new poll, which was released yesterday, says that 29% say the government is just okay in the way it works. 5% describe it as working pretty well. I wonder who the 5% are. They must be federal workers. That's the only thing I can think of. The other poll, 80% of people, again, poll by Fox, disapprove of Congress's actions while supporting Keystone. Here is the deal. Only 14% of voters approve of the job Congress is doing. 80% disapprove. If you could get 80% on your side in anything, you got it made. But in a national poll, 80%, that's almost unheard of. Overall, congressional approval scraped bottom all year. The highest it went all year in May, 16%, 1/6. The lowest, 12%, March and October. Well, that's not surprising either. You know, politicians have been hated, I think, since time immemorial overall, because everybody suspects them of being there to take money from taxpayers for their own purposes. That's kind of always been the, you know, the golden rule of a politician. Talking about taking money, the United Nations and $10 billion, the Green Climate Fund, it's a UN piggy bank. It's supposed to finance climate change projects around the world. But they want immunity from any prosecution in its operations. That means that if they're caught doing anything with the money that's unfair or stealing it, they won't get prosecuted in certain countries. No, they're never going to get that, at least not in the United States, I hope, because the United States funds this thing more than anybody else in the world. But, boy, I'd watch the United Nations when you give them a lot of money. And guess what? We give them more money than anybody else. We have the building. We even have the building here in New York. And it seems like they laugh at us, doesn't it? One other story before we get to our top 10, and not a good one really, but millennials. You know, that's the newest young group, right? There was the baby boomers and the X generation and all the others. Well, 1 in 5 young adults between 18 and 34, 1 in 5 live in poverty, according to the Census Bureau. 20% of us in that age group, more millennials living in poverty today, and they have lower rates of employment compared with their counterparts in 1980. 1 in 5 live in poverty. That's about 13.5 million people. That is kind of scary. All right. It is time. It is time for the top 10 greatest Christmas movies. Now, we all have our own list. And Big Ed, I'm sure you have watched a Christmas movie or two in your life.
Couple.
And so you may have a favorite. And I want to see, this is, by the way, Turner, classic movies. Now, Turner plays all the old movies, no commercials. I love the station. I always watch it. And they've probably shown virtually all these movies that we're going to go through. This was a poll, though, conducted by Turner. And typically, they've got about 8,000 to 5,000 votes in each of these movies that we're going to say from Turner Classic Movies. So here we go. The top 10, according to Turner, best Christmas movies of all time. Number 10. I got to go down and count. You know why? I forgot to number it.
Uh-oh.
And I got more than 10.
Keep your finger on it.
I know. I'm going to. Thank you. I saw this movie. I wonder if you saw it, Big Ed. It was called A Miracle on 34th Street. Do you remember the movie?
Yes, I remember the movie.
Okay. Natalie Wood, the little girl. Okay. Macy's.
Yep.
Okay. It was made in 1948, very uplifting. And the guy that played Santa Claus in that movie was wonderful. He stole it. All right. Number nine, A Christmas Story.
That's one of my favorites. I watch that a couple times a year.
Isn't that a great movie? Yeah. And it's done in a way that it makes it, you think it really is back in the 40s.
Mm-hmm.
It's about the little kid that wants to get his BB gun, right?
Yep, the rifle.
Wonderful, yeah. Number eight, Boris Karloff was in this one. How the Grinch Stole Christmas, the cartoon. Do you recall seeing that?
Yes, I remember that.
All right. Yeah. And good old Boris, he was great as the Grinch. Number seven, Frosty the Snowman.
Yeah, old Frosty.
Everybody knows about Frosty. Great theme song in that one. We all sing it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Number six, I did not see this movie. I probably will never see this movie. Elf.
Good movie.
Was it?
Yes, it was a good movie.
Okay.
Yeah, it was a good movie.
I don't know about something about Will Ferrell.
Yeah,
always,
I know, but it's
the wrong way.
It's funny. It's funny.
Okay, maybe I will see it.
I have that, Frosty, and they're all DVR'd, and I'll watch them Christmas Eve.
Yeah, there you go. All right, number five. I don't know why this is considered a Christmas. I guess it was. Home Alone?
Yeah, it is a Christmas movie.
It is.
Are you kidding me? Yeah.
Is that Macaulay Culkin?
Yeah, the first one was good. The second one and the third one. I don't think he was in the third one. He wanted too much money.
Oh, I believe that.
They replaced him.
But Home Alone, was it supposed to be Christmas?
Yeah, because it was at Christmas time. Oh, he was left at Christmas time.
Oh, I got it. Well, obviously, I didn't see the movie. All right, one, two, three. Number four.
My National Lampoon better be in there.
I'm not going to tell you.
Okay.
But I do know. Number four, though, is A Charlie Brown Christmas.
Yeah.
That's got to be in there.
Yeah, that's DVR'd, too.
That's such a wonderful, heartwarming.
And they're only
movie.
A half an hour, so you can buzz right through them.
Yeah, you can.
Buzz right
you?
Through the commercials, 20 minutes tops.
Never, ever want to forget Charlie Brown with
For
Christmas.
Great in HD now, too.
It is. All right. Number three, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
It's on my DVR list, too.
You know it.
Yeah.
It was a stop-motion animation little film.
Mm-hmm.
Cute little film.
Mm-hmm.
Did stop-motion up until about the 70s.
Abominable Snowman used to scare the crap out of me.
All right, number two. Here's your movie, Big Ed. National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation. The Griswold Family.
Cousin Eddie.
And that was a funny movie. And you got to see that movie every year.
Fried Pussycat.
Yeah. Is that the one where Grandma... Was that the one where Grandma was put on top of the car, or is that a different one? No, that was Vacation.
No, that was Vacation.
Yeah, same group, though, the Griswolds. All right.
Yes.
Here we go. I want you to get,
Oh, I know what it is, so.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, the number one.
Number one. Okay, we're going to let Big Ed announce the number one best Christmas movie of all time is.
It's a Wonderful Life.
You are so right.
Well, I've never seen it because there's too much singing in it. And if you wanted to torture me, you would strap me to a chair, and you would make me watch that. And Sound of Music right behind it.
Well,
and then I would just...
Now, why would you prejudge a movie you've never seen?
I've seen enough of it. I've seen enough of it. And there's just too much singing in it, so...
And It's a Wonderful Life?
Yes. It's too much singing.
There's no singing in it.
Sound of Music, too.
No, it's not.
We're alive.
No, it's not. Are you sure you're thinking about the movie with Jimmy Stewart?
Yeah,
and
Jimmy Stewart, yeah.
Okay. There's not a lot of singing. I think it's a great movie.
Yeah.
Now, I got one real quickly that they didn't put on here. The March of the Wooden Soldiers, Laurel and Hardy.
No, I have that. I have that at home.
I love it.
I have that at home.
Every child should see that movie. 1934
I used to watch that as a kid all the time.
I thought it, exactly. One of my all-time favorite movies. Freedom Works, Merry Christmas. We will talk with you on Monday. Bye for now.
Here's some Wham.